This is a KCSB Public Affairs Spotlight. I'm Jenny Boyer, speaking with Laurent Bacelar, Santa Barbara's Poet Laureate. Laurent, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Very delighted to have you. So I thought we could just start off with your current status as the Poet Laureate of Santa Barbara. Maybe you could talk a bit about, first of all, how does one become the Poet Laureate? How did you receive the news? Did you have to apply?
It's a complicated situation, but I had been observing the Poet Laureates, who all are so amazing and so different, and so they complement each other so well. And I have this deep passion for poetry. It's been my life. And I just wanted to be able now at my age to promote poetry as much as I could and create a community in which poets, but also non-poets, would be happy to meet around poetry, right? And so I observed what the poet laureates were doing, and then one day I went to a group of poet laureates and I said, you know, maybe I'd like to do that. And they looked at me and said, oh, great. And it came out from there. I was then nominated by them, and I received a phone call from Sarah York at the Arts Commission saying, congratulations. And that was it.
And much celebration ensued, I'm sure.
And much celebration. I received all sort of fabulous presents at my, they call it a installation. Not inauguration, but installation. And my grandson said, well, that's like what you do to washing machines, which I thought was delightful. And I received a torch, and I received chocolate tulips, and I received roses and a lot of hugs, which was just wonderful.
Yes, I think actually, because many of your books can be found at Chaucer's Books here in Santa Barbara, and there is appended to the section with your books a photo of you at that installation ceremony decked out as you just described.
With my wreath of
yes.
And it was amazing. I felt like the Statue of Liberty, you know, with my torch and my wreath. And it was quite a beautiful event, actually. And I thank the Arts Commission for that and the city and the mayor.
Yeah, Statue of Poetry.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so can you, what does one do as the Poet Laureate? And I guess that's a two-part question in terms of what the Poet Laureate does, but then what you hope to do as Poet Laureate right now.
Right. I think there are very vague rules. One of the Poet Laureates Emeriti told me, which is you have to be clearly visible at four important events a year. Put that away. There are many, many, many more events. For example, what I like to do is every time a poet from the Santa Barbara poetry community and county, not further, publishes a book of poetry by a publisher, not self-published, I throw a party on my deck. And I invite all the poets and non-poets to come and listen to the poet read some poems from his or her book. That is not a visible, blatant public event, but it's an event. I mean, I'm the wonderful Santa Barbara poet M.L. Brown, that stands for Mary Brown, has just come out with a book called Call It Mist. And next Saturday, everybody's going to meet, and you're invited on the deck to come and listen to her. And then in 2 weeks, Marsha de la O, who won the Isabella Gardner Prize, also has a new book coming out. So there's another party on my deck. But that's not all I do, throw parties. I would like very much to be able to tell myself that at the end of my tenure, I have convinced people who swore they would never write a line of poetry, have convinced them that they can write poetry and that poetry is for everyone. And that poetry is not only there for the academics and the intellectuals and the professors, but also in the street and around the kitchen table, I think that's very important. I'm going to visit the Chumash community very soon and ask if I can work with teenagers, maybe write poems about their identity, what they feel, and how they feel about being Chumash. I'd like to visit retirement homes and give a workshop there and ask them if they have stories to tell and write poetry about that. I'll also... One of my plans is, I don't know if you know the comics Peanuts. At a certain moment, Lucy has, you know, the poet is in, the doctor is in, there's that thing is in, you know. And I want to do the poet is in. And thanks to the Santa Barbara Library, they will give me a little room where I will sit with, you know, the, not literally the sign the poet is in, but it will be announced, so that anybody who wants to come and talk to me about poetry, how to write poetry, which poet they love, why they're angry because poetry doesn't rhyme anymore, for example, I've had that, come and chit-chat with me a few hours a week. I'd also like to give workshops. I'd also like to, all this free, of course, right? I'd also like to give classes. For example, study a poem for an hour, a poem by Phil Levine or Bridget Piggin Kelly, and just go deep and look at how a poem is made. Mm-hmm. And then I have another project, which is going to be a big one. But I think it might happen because I already have the press who will publish it. There's a poetry press in Santa Barbara called Gunpowder Press. David Starkey, who was a poet laureate, started that, and he also works with Chris Yost, who was a poet laureate. They have accepted my project, and my project is to create a small anthology of poetry by Santa Barbara poets, children, adults, and old people. Publish those poems in a beautiful little anthology, and now, this is the important part, distribute that anthology for free in all the clinics and waiting rooms of the hospital and places where people sit waiting with some anxiety, and just read poetry. And it will be there for free. I'd love to do that, and I'm going to start now that Poetry Month is over. I'm going to take a deep breath and then go read poems and request poems to make this anthology possible.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. I mean, I think so much of poetry does a lot of things. I think one of the things it can do for a lot of people is give form to feeling. So finding places where people might be struggling with that or grappling with feelings and placing poetry there just sounds like such a wonderful idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And in general, it just sounds like you have a lot of plans to increase the accessibility and the inclusivity of poetry. That sounds really wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I really want to promote it out of academe, out of where it usually sits, and make and encourage people to write very simply, you know, very, very simply, as like you talk, but just a little tighter, mm-hmm. and show your feelings and show what your hopes and sadnesses are in the simplest way. You don't have to be smart. Mm-hmm. You really don't.
No, I mean, using language is available to anyone.
Exactly.
And actually, just on that concept of language, I know, I just in reading about you online and looking at all your work, you speak multiple languages.
Yeah.
English is not your only language. You've worked as a translator. I wondered how that informs how you see yourself as a poet, how it informs your poetry. I'm sure it informs other things as well. But
it does. It does. You know, the Americans are always amazed at how Europeans know many languages, but it is not at all such a mystery. I'm from Belgium. Belgium is not much bigger than Maryland. Now imagine being in the middle of Maryland and driving 2 hours north and having to learn another language. Driving 2 hours south and learning another language. Driving 3 hours east and learning a third language. Then going from the port of Antwerp in Belgium to England and learning yet another language. So if you don't know at least two or three languages in Europe, you're pretty insular. You have a problem. And so I speak fluent French, fluent Flemish, fluent Dutch. Oh, and English.
Yes, right. Clearly, yes.
Yeah, there you go. And I've translated Dutch poetry into French and French poetry into English and English poetry into French. And I love doing that. And I love learning as I go because I'm still not 100% fluent in English.
I think translation is a great way to learn a language, just learning to maneuvering how you're going to place something into your own words.
Right.
Do you have a favorite language to translate either out of or into?
Frankly, my favorite language of all is my mother tongue is Flemish. But people would think I answer French. It's English. I love English. It has given me so much freedom. It has given me such possibility of expression outside of the rules and concepts of French poetry. So I'm delighted with my new language, English, that I learned to speak fluently around 1986 when I moved to America. Yeah.
Wow. I actually, a poem of yours, not in your most recent collection, it was in a previous collection. I saw it online called English Flavors.
Yes.
I love this first line, which, do you mind if I...
Please read it because I don't have it with me.
Okay. And this is just the first kind of stanza.
Yeah.
I love to lick English the way I licked the hard, round licorice sticks the Belgian nurse gave me for 6 good conduct points on Sunday after Mass.
Yeah. I was raised in a nunnery, in an orphanage, and so we got these little sticks of licorice. They would break like glass, and they were black, and we'd have black mustaches and black tongues, but we didn't get many of them because they found all sort of excuses not to give us licorice sticks after Mass, right?
I just love the sound of that line and the comparison of language and nostalgia. And, you know, this new language, but this nostalgic context. Let's talk about your most recent book of poetry, which is a collection called These Many Rooms. I think just the organization of the book is really interesting. And I wondered if you could talk about that and maybe also the way you use form in your poetry, because that seems quite distinct. I don't know if that was for this collection or something that's more descriptive of your poetry in general?
Right. This book was a difficult one to write because I was married to the poet Kurt Brown. This was a next marriage. I was married in Belgium and I had 2 children whom I adore who moved to America with me. One lives in San Luis Obispo, one in L.A. I'm in the middle. When they're hungry, they know where to go for a Sunday night dinner. And I met, when I moved to America, the poet Kurt Brown, who taught me everything I know. And we taught at Sarah Lawrence. We taught at many universities and colleges. And then we decided to retire in Santa Barbara, where we both taught at UCSB very briefly. And my husband died extremely unexpectedly, very quickly, in 3 days. And it silenced me. I had to fall back on my feet and try to find the words to express something that I hadn't been told about. I didn't know what it was to be a widow. I hadn't read the books. And here's the good news, is it doesn't happen the way they tell you it happens. There's no stage 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, it's sure, maybe it was in the life of the person who wrote the book, but certainly not in my life. And so I had to learn to organize what struck me as the most important thing. It's amazing the importance that light had in my mourning of my husband. Light saved my life. And thank God there's light in Santa Barbara. And then I decided, how can I put absence, terrible sadness? I mean, he was the love of my life, really. Terrible sadness and sorrow. How can you write about light in these circumstances? And form helped me, because if you use a lot of space, it talks as well of absence, because it's white. It's white space on the page. So it talks as well of absence as it does not use darkness, which is the characters on the page, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a balance between darkness and light, even in the typography. Is it typography or typography? In one of those, one of the two. And so it also taught me concision. I don't want to be a snob and talk about my previous books, but if you look at the previous books and this book, the form is completely different. Mm-hmm. It's like, again, I don't want to compare myself to Picasso or something like that, but it's a period. You know, the blue period, the pink period, the abstract period. He had these moments where what he did was not a Picasso anymore. It was the new Picasso. And this experience in my life taught me the essence, how to stick to the essence of things, and how to trust the reader, and that the reader would get it, and that I didn't need to explain everything all the time. And then just by putting important moments like paintings in a gallery, that the reader would go from one painting to the other and get the whole. And I hope it worked. I mean, that was my intention.
I think it absolutely does. And I just love, I don't know if I would call it a working metaphor, but this idea of rooms, because you are bringing the reader into these rooms or singular room with you, mm-hmm. allowing them to look around, be there, be present. I mean, I know rooms and poetry, you know, the earliest sonnets were compared to pretty rooms.
Yes, they were, sonnets, indeed.
Pretty rooms, and
smart of you.
We are here with Lauren Bacalar, Poet Laureate of Santa Barbara. She has agreed to read us a poem.
It's a poem that introduces my book, because the book focuses on many rooms, the rooms in a life, the rooms in a house, the rooms in the past, etc. And here's the poem. I needed for months after he died to remember our rooms, some lit by the trivial, others gentle with an obscurity that comforted us. It hid our own darkness. So for months, duteous, I remembered. Rooms where friends lingered, rooms with our beds, with our books, rooms with curtains I sewed from bright cottons, tables of laughter, a chipped bowl in early light, black branches by a window bowing toward night. And those rooms, too, in which we came together to be away from all, and sometimes from ourselves, I remembered that also. But tonight, as I lean into the doorway to his room and stare at dusk settled there, what I remember best is how, to throw my arms around his neck, I needed to stand on the tips of my toes.
Thank you very much. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
One thing that really that kind of stood out to me in that poem was you've got multiple rooms you're inhabiting. There's these memories of rooms and then the present empty singular room.
Right.
But you don't end with that image. You end with the memory and the people inhabiting those rooms, the feelings.
Yeah.
That's just really powerful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I also talk about rooms that are more metaphorical. Like, for example, I have a poem called Ocean Rooms. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because there's no rooms in the ocean, as you very well know. Ocean Rooms. The moon trawled the low tide far back behind the beach. And by the way, in parentheses, that's Arroyo Burro Beach that I walk daily, almost daily. So let's start again. The room trawled the low tide far back behind the beach, beyond black rocks, into a shimmer of gravel and beach glass. A climped rug of green, amber, gold, hidden most of the year in the ocean's back rooms. But it's winter solstice, and a large sun is all chilled radiance this morning. The tourists are gone, the locals still asleep or on their way to work, so the ocean throws open its rooms for me alone, lays bare a million splinters and shattered deaths, shells and boats and glass and bones, letting the sun stun them with air and light. All of this, such wonder and wreckage, unburied, alive, between sky and sea. I'm glad for this beach, glad for its tides, and for things that do come back. Just as I leave, coming close so eagerly, a backlit wave swells, rises, curls, and drowns this instant back into its kelp-choked rooms.
That poem makes me think of Elizabeth Bishop and some of her shoreline writing, but it also sounds very locally informed. I was wondering if perhaps you could talk about that a little bit, how the geography that you currently inhabit here in Santa Barbara
right.
informs your work in general, but that poem specifically.
And many other poems in my book. I mean, for example, I learned a term that I'm so in love with because, see, it's a new language for me. It's called sundowner wind. I mean, how beautiful is that, sundowner wind? And I wrote a poem about that and about the fires that devastated our hills. Of course, the environment influences you. And for me, coming from a gray, rainy, taciturn, narrow-minded country, the light and the generosity of the people and the beauty of the city are just a blessing every day. And it certainly helped me get out of many dark moments.
I love this theme of finding the light. I think that is a really great note to end on. But I do have one final question, which is, where can we find you, whether that's digitally or in real time? We want your work. We want you. Where do we go for that?
Well, I think that our beautiful Chaucer's bookstore is extraordinary, and they carry all my books. Maybe they don't carry the translation, but the translation is available on the translation of a Flemish poet that I loved so much called Herman de Koning. The book is called The Plural of Happiness, which is such a great title. You can find all my books, of course, on Amazon, but I want you to support our local independent bookstores first.
Absolutely.
And you can Google me, you know.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Are there any upcoming events we should know about?
Yes and no. What I'm very thankful for is that Jace Turner and the Santa Barbara Public Library are going to offer me all these moments where I will be teaching, lecturing, consulting for free, and they are going to announce it as soon as the schedule is established.
Okay, so the library is yet another place we yes. will be able to find you and something we
and my books also
an yeah. eye on.
Yes.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank
what
you.
A beautiful conversation.
Thank
it's
you.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I'm Jenny Boyer, speaking with Laurent Bosselaar for this PA Spotlight.